the annual report of the Water Board. They now comply with all these provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. So that's the first session that we are having. And then the second one would be, you would know, honourable members, that yesterday I also indicated to you that we did receive a representation from the various organizations on information and input into this aspect of water quality. And we said that, of course, we should entertain that, and that is why we have concluded the water quality report hearings that we've had. So I think we're quite happy that we're having quite a number of civil society organizations here that we're going to speak to that. And then, honourable members, we, as a policy officer, have done a bit of our own homework that we have got to conclude as a committee. And that is some reports that we have to deal with ourselves. But when we get there, then we can talk about it. And I... at this stage, if there aren't anything else from the members, and I at this stage ask that we start with Porcello and welcome them back again, and ask that they do their presentation and their annual report. Let me just say to all the other people, of course, you are free to sit in the meeting, but if you feel you don't want to listen to the water board, so please do that also. So I think it's entirely up to yourself to listen to the annual report of the city water board that you have involved. The Honourable Chairperson, Mekonisa Tsenda, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Members of the other boards, Members from the Trust National, thank you and good morning. And thank you very much, ma'am, for affording us this opportunity. We appreciate it. I will be presenting the synopsis of the annual report for the year ended 30th of June 2007. When we started SLI, I am doing that on behalf of the chairperson, Mr. Eddie Indefan. The board was comprised of 6 members, and there was specific direction from the minister in terms of Section 41, Item 2 of the Water Act. It was to consider the findings and the recommendations set out in the forensic report and take all necessary steps to render good governance at Botswana Water. And second, it was to proceed with the criminal charges already laid in this matter, as well as to consider any other possible charges deemed necessary. The third one was to proceed with any civil action to recover any losses suffered by Botswana Water by the action of any person or persons involved, and to proceed with the disciplinary steps against any responsible person. And the term of office of the board under the review ended 2006. And for the following 6 months, I think in January 2007, to 2007, the board operated without, Butula was operated without the board. And then at the end of the term, the board had successfully implemented the recommendation that set out in the forensic report of the late Mr. Andy Timmerman and was served with. And by the time when the board was going out, with the proof of payment back from his estate. And secondly, the board managed to improve the financial status of Botswana by reducing the expenditure and complied with the PFMA and other applicable legislation. As a result, the new money to purchase vehicles and reduce the maintenance costs. And secondly, the board successfully negotiated the new organizational structure with the union and was supposed to be implemented by the new board. And we managed to set a monitor to review the policies to place the current policies which were out of sync with the applicable legislation. Suspended the sale of houses which we thought were suspicious and we instituted an investigation. In terms of finances, the focus during that year under review was to improve debt collection, especially from the municipality. This is still a challenge. The other area was to reduce the operational cost. And despite many challenges, the board executed its fiduciary duties, which is attested by the unqualified report that was presented this morning. And finally, I would convey our appreciation to the board members who made themselves available for the appointment to the board and were willing to undertake these duties under the restrained conditions. And the same is wish for them to the management of the civil staff to enable the board to function as called. We wish also to appreciate our heartfelt gratitude to the minister, Lindwe Hendricks, and the staff for the audience support. And also thank our viewers. Thanks for the vote of confidence, and I would allow the CD to continue to do financial statements. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Fiamba. And taking from where the Chairperson left, let me firstly deal with the introduction of the delegation from Botswana. The Chairperson is Ms. Sophia Debekora Chakhan, and we also have joined by the other member of the board, Mr. Matsidiso David Dikuko, who is just behind me. And we've got the executive, the manager, or the executive who have accompanied this delegation, is Ms. Patience Bokwatile, Ms. Nelly, who is responsible for corporate services. Ms. Nelly Bayou, she's responsible for operations, and Mr. Kafiso Mulwa, who is responsible for our finance unit. They are all seated here. They are on my left at the back. I'll move into the presentation quickly. My name is Koli Bukava. I'm the Chief Executive of Botswana Water Board. Quickly, the presentation will deal with the following issues. The area of operation, which I think one of the honorable members asked as the chairperson was attending and taking this committee through the introductory remarks. And we'll deal with governance structures. We'll look at water quality, infrastructure, corporate services, and we'll deal very briefly with the financials. Botswana Water Board operates in the Northwest Province. It maintains schemes in urban, peri-urban, and rural areas of the following water service authorities: Ngagamudiri Mulema District Municipality, Sarutumuzi District Municipality. And we are also, in terms of operation, having been appointed by SWAS to become an implementing agency of the SWASA Water Scheme. The SWASA Water Scheme
provides Botswana with raw oats. I'm sorry that we are repeating that bullet with raw water to Botswana. And we also operate the wastewater treatment work. Now, to move quickly to the governance structure, the chairperson has already indicated that the present board was appointed on the 1st of July 2007. The previous board, which the chairperson has referred, which was given a specific directive by the minister, was appointed for 18 months, mandate was to implement the recommendation of the forensic investigations which were carried out as per the directive of the minister at that time. And the term of the previous board ended in December 2006. Due to the challenges of the Botswana Water Board, it also happened that there were 6 months left where the institution was operated without a board. That period was January 2007 to June 2007. Hence, after that 6 months, a new board was appointed, which is led by the chairperson here. And due to also some challenges in the management, the new board appointed the new executive in November 2007. And I'm referring to the managers who are responsible for the three units which are already introduced here. During this financial year, the board did not have an audit and risk management committee. But during that period, the board saw it fit that there must be an internal or ad hoc internal work to be done with specific responsibility or specific mandate to deal with the controls on payment. This was as a result of the board determining that processes of payment in the board might not be done accordingly. And that ad hoc audit work assisted the board to deal with some of the financial misconduct which were detected by that internal body. Water quality. I'm not going to take long, Honorable Chairperson, on this matter. But just to indicate, because we have already reported in the full report that Northwest relies mostly on underground water, and those our sources are Tituma Dam, Mladedi Dam, Sujani Dam, and some of our covers. And the main one for the area in Masike, which we call it Moloko Eye, is one of our sources for water. We operate and also maintain more than 500 boreholes, and we are operating and maintaining 6 water purification plants. Just to mention them, they are also reflected in the body of the report, them Mabato, Masikeng, Isusem, Mutswedi, Inokana, Opfontein. We do, however, also operate and maintain the purification plants in Mulatedi area and Depte Port. The Mulatedi area, I'll explain quickly when we are. I'm about to complete this presentation. It's one of the areas. I mean, from that plant, we are servicing an area which originally was under Botelo, but after re-engineering of the Botelo, it was taken over, I think by now, by Mahali, as we are talking. And just to also indicate that the boreholes are tested according to the SENS 24-1 guidelines and rectifications are done accordingly. Honorable Chair, I just want also to indicate that it might have been noted generally that we have also have hotspots around the problem of water quality in our area of operation, particularly in the Lipuru-Tsi-Nubikana area. That information will be succinctly provided in our annual report 2007-2008. But we are ready to respond to some of the interventions which we are making together with Department of Water Affairs and Forestry in respect of those areas. The next slide, Honorable Chair, they are just more of the information to this committee member about the water quality in terms of what is that which we are measuring, the total coliforms, pH, calcium, pH and turbidity, and also the around the water treatment plant. We are giving a picture there as to what is that which we are actually doing, and it is reflected on page 11 of this presentation, up to page. We'll run through that without getting into the details, up to page 16 or slide 16 of the presentation. And I'll then move to the infrastructure. The infrastructure rollout plan. We have raised this thing with the main shareholder, which is DAF, around the transfer of assets. We have DAF has been engaged in the process of transferring the assets to the municipalities or the water services authorities as designated by the constitution. But as Botswana Water, we are engaged in the process, and the question of the transfer of those assets which we have been operating and maintaining, we are discussing with DAF around the ownership thereof, even if the transfer agreement is in the process or advanced process of engagement. The present board has seen it fit to open the discussions with DAF to see if, or to make a determination if Botswana, based on its capacity, will not be able to take over the ownership. So it's a matter of which we will be able to report, as I indicated, in the 2007-2008 annual report, or even in the coming year of activities. I'll move to the corporate services quickly, Professor. As I've indicated, we've got the following four divisions, which are our human resources, which is part of corporate services, the marketing division, operations, and finance. The staff complement of our organization is 296. Of course, you'll see in the body of the annual report, we are talking about 262, but that is in relation to the membership of the recognized labor organization within our, in our workplace. During this financial year, we recorded achievements around skills development. As a water board, during that time, we realized that there are serious skills gaps, and we have plugged them in to ensure that most of the members which required to be reskilled to be taken through the appropriate learning processes. And as indicated by the chairperson when she made her opening introductory remarks, it is very clear that with the state of affairs which was brought out also by the forensic investigation, there would necessarily be the resultant labor disputes in the workplace. And during this financial year, many of the the labor relations problems were dealt with, and of course, I will indicate that some of them, we will be able to resolve them even beyond, we will be able to finalize them beyond this, beyond this present financial year where we are in, because they too do take time because of the requirements which we must follow in terms of ventilating on the dispute and the problems. But I must indicate that we were able to create a space for the employees to engage with the employer, and that has been achieved, and Botswana is beginning to focus on what is their own mandate. And the financials, which is the last slide, we received an unqualified report, but there was a clear going concern on the debt which we are owing to DAF, which is 34.6 million. We are, however, engaging with DAF, and that process we have started in June, where we are asking DAF, because we think that if we go into our report, Botswana from 1994 up to 1998 was operating in a far bigger area than now. Now we are looking at verifying even the local police licenses which were being issued to Botswana, whether we are not also being charged for other areas which might not necessarily be the responsibility of Kilo Water at the moment, to an extent that some of the areas have been taken by Tshwane Metro, some have been taken by Bojanala District Municipality, which is being serviced by the Mahalis. So we are engaging with DWARF to assist us to verify that, and they've opened the door for us to engage on this matter. With the view that if this is resolved, this debt might be significantly reduced or to some extent be written off by the main shareholder. And that, Chairperson, leads me to the end of our presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much,
very good morning to the members of the portfolio committee, the officials of the staff, colleagues from other board, and as indicated by the honorable chairperson, other members of the public represented by NGOs. Good morning to you all. My name is Bekandan Mufidi. I'm the chief executive officer of the Matatudo Water. I'm with two members of Matatudo. I'm with Dr. Lance Charles, who is a member of the board, executive chairperson of the Finance and Audit Committee. And I'm also with Lauren Pachito, who is the CFO for Matatudo Water. We were meant to be with our chairperson, but unfortunately she took in yesterday and couldn't make it. As with our water boards, we were requested to come and represent our report, due to an evidence of submission, as well as an audit finding against us in the year after financial results. So these are the results of the year 2006 and 2007. The presentation has the background, the audit report, we just talk about what happened what we're doing, the finance report, water quality, load shedding risk management, what the status is of the water, the infrastructure development project, and then the conclusion and the questions. And Tatuza is a statutory water user established in 1980 in terms of the Special Consumer of the Water Act, 1956, Act number 54 of 1956. Now operates the service provider in accordance with the Water Bill Act number 108 of the 1987. The area of operation is from Utugela River up to the Mozambican border and inland into up to Ulundi. We stated here the district municipalities that we work with and the different services that we provide to the district municipalities. We are in the process of actually extending the offering that we provide to the district municipalities and to ensure that we actually play a meaningful role in a water services delivery in our area of operation. The board and the executive team has got the board has a 10 member, 8 of whom are African, 1 white, who is Dr. Lance with us here, and one Indian, and there's 5 females and 5 males in the board. And the executive team, currently 5, we have 3 African and 2 male, and 3 Africans and 2 whites, and all of them male. We are in the process of recruitment for the corporate affairs manager, where we made a clear decision that it's going to be a female appointment. The strategic the strategic intent of the Chateau Water, in line with the strategic session of 2007-2008, we clearly aligned ourselves with objectives or intended to be achieved, and the number of programs that we have initiated in order to ensure that we advance the socio-economic development in the area that we operate in. We are also in the process as a board and EBSCO of the strategic planning. We've had a session with EBSCO where EBSCO has done a strategic alignment, and we unfortunately had to postpone the program that was meant for the past due to some of the management. In terms of the audit report, we had a consortium of auditors that was recently appointed. Our recent audit company operated with us for a period of 20 years. And now we have a new audit company that is auditing us. And the financial statements are prepared in terms of generally accepted accounting principles, the Water Services Act, and the TFMA. In the year 2006-2007, we received a qualified audit because of the trust that existed, the soil trust. The trust was set up to finance the draft ministry emergency transfer scheme in 1996. And the last audit the financials of the trust were in February 2005. The purpose of the trust was set up, the purpose for which the trust was set up ended in July 2006, and we are currently in the process of dissolving it. We had a case with the members of the trust, some of whom have migrated out of the country, and one of them decided that they're not going to assign the documents that related to the dissolution of the trust, and we are in the process with the appointment of new members of the trust, which has been completed, and the financials of the trust have been completed, and we are busy with an audit by the external auditors. There was also a prior year statement of 2005-2006 financials in order to comply with disclosure requirements, correct 7 prior errors noted. These errors were as a result of non-compliance with accounting standards as well as omissions from previous years. The prior figures were therefore adjusted to ensure compliance. The financial report of Patrice Water, we have an income statement that has been prepared there for your consideration. You'll note that the operating income before finance costs increased by 3% from 2005-2006 to 2006-2007. Operating cost to total income decreased from 76% to 73% in the same reporting period. And this is in line with the board strategy to streamline and contain costs. And we are further looking at the many levels of the water and where the resources are being utilized so that we can redistribute or redirect resources to areas that are mission critical for well to the water. The net financing cost reduced by 38% in the reporting period. We had a loan that was redeemed, it was $5 million in 2006-2007. And also we are renegotiating the interest rate with the loan provider. DBSA reduced the interest rate from 16.5% to 13%. And it's a huge difference in our number. The other ratios, operating ratios, we're moving away from a delta scale, which in the 90s, we're now sitting in a 53. In particular, it was one water services provider, Umkhanya Kute, but we were sensitive in the way that we're actually managing them, in that we do understand the economic situation in that environment. But we are working with them closely to ensure that as and when they get their funding, they are able to pay us. But our situation has improved quite drastically. We should report even better numbers in the future. The current ratio and the quick ratio indicating our position in relation to the assets. We are making a small improvement on the current ratio. Our quick ratio has remained exactly the same. And our return on assets has gone down to 10% from 11.5% because of the allowance that we're creating for municipalities that cannot afford. The water quality on our RT has accreditation, panel 17025. We've renewed the accreditation. And in order to comply to the 2010 water quality measure, we log all our data into the National Water Quality Reporting System. Water quality testing and analysis is done for the municipalities, industry, and the private individuals. We are in the process of realigning the laboratory into a fully-fledged scientific services for our stakeholders in our operating area. We're also involved in the National Microbial Analysis Program for Bacterial Quality and participate in 45 in our operation. We've maintained a 99% plus compliance with respect to a typical and bacteriological water quality. The next slide basically gives the statistics of some of the key measures for water quality. And as you can see, most of our achievements are above the limit. On the load shedding with the problems that we've experienced with Eskom. On our part as the Sapphire Water, we have done an analysis of the facilities that we own, and we've attached as well for your consideration the emergency plan, contingency plan that we put in place. And we've also agreed with the power supply, that is both the Eskom and Sapphire City, and identified with them the critical installations that should not be load shedded, because it then actually brings the city to a standstill. We've also advised our customers that we provide the services with regards to the electricity increases from Eskom, and that these would be passed on as and when they occur. But obviously, with the consideration of the improvement of efficiencies on our side, so that we pass on slightly less than what has actually been passed to us by Eskom. We have in the slide here the installations that we manage and the contingency plan, the situation of the contingency plan. As you can see on the extreme right of the slide, is that we are in a low risk situation in as far as the power shedding is concerned. And then the only risk that exists is in relation to the total system collapse, which we are not anticipating, which then would actually mean that the country and the region would actually grind to a halt. Infrastructure development. As an organization, we operate in an environment that is the poverty-stricken in the country. we recognize the challenges that we face, given the people that we serve. And we have some municipalities which don't have large business presence and therefore are not able to attract their skills. And then also some of these areas are infrastructure and development starved. There is no development that is taking place, and there is no infrastructure either from ESCOM or any other entity. And also that there's extreme poor access to water and inability to pay. So those are the challenges that we face in the area that we operate in, and we take cognizance of that in our dealing with the water services provider. In view of the above, the particular water facility direction involves forming strategic partnerships with the water services authorities so that the relationships are symbiotic and take cognizance of each other's challenges. We support and assist water service authorities in meeting their mandate. We try to get in so that we can utilize as a service provider. I am not creating the impression that it is easy, but it is a recognition from Statistical Water that we continue to strive for a closer and better relationship with our water services authorities. And also assist DWARF in their water and sanitation provision, the project that DWARF comes up with, like a school and water and sanitation program. And then establish three networks with all their role players in the industry. Got a number of projects here that we're involved with. Bangani Phase 2, the D-Line, Exaro, the MCC panels at Zezi, and the seawater supply to Fosco. In the next slide, Sabisa bulk system, and the regional bulk water supply plan, which is a plan that includes the municipalities. We're spending 5 million rands, whereby we're working in particular with Mkanya Vudu. We're saying we have a regional bulk water plan budget. We're spending 2 million. There's some funds available for you also. So we're using our consultants to work with their consultants. And then Sikuwe Phase 3 and 4 and Gangwa Nape. And there are other significant projects undertaken by Mshatwiza Water, which is working for water contract with DWARF for 3 years, water and nature services for various schools, budget provided by DWARF for phase one is 38 million rand. Basically, we're involved in infrastructural projects worth 881 million rand in a 3 year. I do believe that given the challenges in our area, the money will actually be well spent to ensure that we help tackle problems of poverty and socio-economic underdevelopment. And the benefits to the communities of all of these projects is one, job creation as we embark on projects, skills development in that the people get to get the new skills that they never had before, and also enterprise development opportunities, whereby also previously we've had some newer enterprises created as a result of a water resource management program that we've implemented in these areas. In conclusion, the final operational position of Mshatwiza Water continues to be strong and stable. We are a viable entity, and the board of management continues to strive to achieve the entity's vision of providing world-class water and related services to all stakeholders. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Just preparing the answer spot, but I'll continue with the presentation. Which you know that we have already started with the process of the disestablishing of the Kangala Water, and currently the process is being managed by the regional office of Mpumalanga. we are going to give a presentation of the current status in terms of the annual report that was presented up to June 2007, and also the processes that are taking place currently up to the latest stage of the 8th, the annual report that has been taken on Monday.
We ask you to do the following. We want to focus on the annual report only. I think if there are especially a couple of weeks ago reported on both Bush Park Ridge and Ikangala, I think in terms of the act, that's a separate process that you can do the following. You mentioned about the establishment, but I think you would understand in terms of the National Water Services Act, you're supposed to follow the procedure towards Parliament. So I don't think that we want to do an annual report here today. So do I take it that you're going to deal with it, or because if I know there's hardly anyone left in the report?
Certainly, Chairperson, we're going to just go through the annual report with the financials and up to this far, because the last audit, I think we are busy with the closing of the audit report that is being currently done. So just waiting for copies that have been made.
Thank you. Why does that ask you to see? Do you have a presentation
Not at all. I think there was a bit of a miscommunication that we're going to present on the annual report itself. That's right. But we don't have a presentation, we just apply, we made the copies quickly, then we will hard copies, and then we'll quickly talk to them.
I don't know, members, do you want to wait for the hard copies, or shall we move on?
Thank you, Chairperson. Isn't there something else that the committee can deal with while this getting itself ready?
Would you like to wait for the hard copies, or do you want to ask questions?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I propose that we continue with the questions from the other board while we are still waiting for the report.
That's the view of all the members, Ms. Blackett. Of course, you do know that this is not something that I say. When you walk into the room, you walk in the room with pockets and doors, because we don't have sufficient time to look for pockets for the operation. So I will reluctantly agree with you. Can we deal with questions both for Cheryl and for Ms. Blackett? You can just indicate to which board you want to put the question. If there's no questions, please, for the two of you, I will also communicate.
This is to Cheryl and Walker. Point one is the question to the audit report. The audit on business and the pace of payment process. Now, I think that's rather a very vague statement to make that find weaknesses. Now, what are these weaknesses? I think that is important. I'm raising this, and I want to raise this question very sharply, come and share the call. Only last week, or the week before last, public service was pointed out about the corruption in the state, in our state, the state machinery. There are something like 5,000 cases that they are investigating. And only last week again, in Gauteng, the department cannot account for 180 million rand. And they gave a breakdown, transport, health and care. I raise this because it's very important for us that we should know as to how this comes about when we say weakness in the sector payment processes. Now, for instance, if a bill is presented to one one looks at the bill and says, well, we are owing X, Y, and Z, and you make that payment. So one is really baffled about this question of the weaknesses, and weaknesses that deal with payments, underpayments, overpayments, and so on. Now, I simply find it very difficult to follow. So I think we should get some very clarity exactly where we are going wrong. Because the question is that because our country is also gripped by poverty, we are in a poverty trap, although in spite of the fact that we are making great strides, but I think when you look at the balance sheet, if you draw up a balance sheet, you'll find if the assets, the income, and rather the income does not exceed, it should be in such a way that we ought to know that we are not in the red, but in the black. Now, I think we need that. The other is the self-complement, but that's the simple thing, the 296. I just like to have some breakdown. Now, achievements and skills and development also throw some light on that. In what area do we've achieved the skill development? Which area does it cover? And how many people have been involved in this? Now, the next point is about the debt. That too, I think, we need a little more clarity. How did this come about? And of course, it stated that it is that some negotiations are taking place to sort out the debt. Now, the last point is on page 10. Again, can I share about this is from Mshatuzi Water about the question of complying with the disclosure requirements, and it says about having to the result of non-compliance. Again, I think one needs to know what is it that we're not. We've got regulations, we've got very many laws in our tablet books, and one is going to simply comply with it. So, therefore, you cannot be left vague. Now, because we know exactly where we are going wrong, so we could rectify it, and that we could save money, and that money could be used for the upliftment of what people spend.
Thank you. I'm amazed when we get a presentation and you have qualified support year after year and your debt is outstanding and somebody says, sit here and actually say our finance are in good order. But I don't think that is correct. Good order also means that you can collect your debt. So if you don't do it, you're not in good order, sir. Chairperson, I think what we should seriously address, and it's not in either of the presentations that we've done this morning, is the exact skill shortage. How many qualified, proper engineers, etc., 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 do you have? Because if you look at water boards all over, but it includes the two that's presented to us today, is that the infrastructure. I don't honestly believe that infrastructure at the moment is up to scratch. I think there's a major backlog. I think there are quality problems. And it is also included as a result of the type of skill that we have in water board. The main concern, however, is debt collection. Yes, surely, Chair, you know, we can talk to DWAS, we can write off debt, etc., etc. But except for talking and negotiating year after year, what are you actually intermixing to make municipalities pay their outstanding debt to your water bill? I mean, look at the amount. It's millions. Not peanuts. And you will still till doomsday come and you will still not get your debt. Something else, another plan of action must be put in place to actually do proper debt collection. Chairperson, and then I know I might be a bit unfair, but may I say it always amazes me when any water board organization appears before this committee, there's always a plan for next month or in 2 months' time. We never get a proper report of actually what happened at that planning. And I see one water board says here to actually plan something for September 2008. I mean, the other issue was about the trust. 2 years now since we got a trust dissolved. I can understand people living overseas, etc. It doesn't take 2 years to dissolve a trust if you really put an effort into it. My concern, Chairperson, is that we're not really hands-on. And you can't expect to do well and do all these things if you're not day-to-day hands-on. Thank you, Chair. Sorry, Chair, I must say, I mean, overall the water boards are not doing bad, but there are these matters, skills, the finance and infrastructure is permanently a matter of concern.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My first question would be directed to the Minister of Water Board with regards to the question that was raised that the previous board actually ended up in November 2016, the new board was appointed in the first of July. So, and they are saying that apparently when they were actually deciding board, there were some activities that were not actually done correctly, where they said that there's criminal charges against some people within the board. And I just want to find out as to whether those actually those activities, those who were not are not actually needed to have been happened. With regard to the question of, because this is also indicated that based in the rural areas of Northwest. I just want to find out whether are those actually municipalities that they are saving, actually saving their money to the water board. How is their infrastructure actually? Are they actually making sure that this new board that actually they are making sure that people are getting clean water in those areas? And I also wanted to find out in fact that as to whether how far are they with regard to the question of the disciplinary steps taken and investigation with regard to the problems that they actually found out from the from that board. And the second question that I need also poses with regard to the Mkatwiz. The Mkatwiz here, they also indicated that in the audit issue, they talk of the auditor, they just appointed a new external auditor, meaning that maybe the previous auditors didn't do their work correctly, but here they are saying that there is also another problem with regard to the case against members of the class. And I just want to find out if this new actually company is doing better than the old company that was doing it. And I also want to find out as to whether also those municipalities in those areas also pay their dues to the water board of Mr. Chief. And if that is the case, do you have good people or people with expertise to work to deal with finance in your board that can actually help the board to get unqualified audit report, not getting always getting qualified audit. So I think that's my submission. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I unfortunately didn't hear the presentation presented by the Chair of Water Board. Nevertheless, I heard when my colleague Honorable and about that overall the water board seems to be doing well. Yes, in some, maybe it's not a totally incorrect statement, but these three whom we seen their report in the chat and whom we are discussing only today, you know, there are clear guidelines as to what water board should do, when they should do what, and when the annual report should be ready, and the route that it should follow. When any water board cannot follow those procedures, simple procedures, as laid out very clearly, and we have to make a special effort, set out a special date, just to discuss those that we didn't discuss when it was time for the water board to appear before us, then I don't know whether doing well also covers those that are in front of us today. For those reasons. So, for both of the water boards that we've heard so far, Chairperson, my first question would be is, what can they tell us today, what can they tell this committee that will ensure us that when next the water board has to appear before this committee, they will be among those that have done everything on time and correctly, and whose annual report we would have been able to have studied by the time that all of the water boards are supposed to appear before us. I would like both of them to say something to this committee that would ensure us that we will have said next time we meet with this chairperson. And then I have just a question also for both. Where they have problems with municipalities, and because the committee knows that this is a fact, most of the water boards, if not all, have problems with municipalities not paying them on time. Again, they have clear guidelines as to what must be done. When different entities are in dispute, and when somebody don't pay you, you have a dispute. You know, whether you want to declare a dispute or not, there's a dispute. You want your money for services rendered. So, in relation to that, what I want to ask the two of them is that, are they aware that currently there is a review on, you know, Water Services Act, and are they making input in relation to the review that will see us finding ourselves after it's going to be quite a long journey, of course, but are making input in relation to the problems that they're facing, you know, into this process, so that at the end of the process, we would have jointly come up with steps that will remedy the situation that they find themselves in vis-a-vis people that owe them. And then I just want to for both water boards, chairperson, because it's the same question, the same thing for both of them. Were they asked by DWAF to assist with anything, with big clinics or schools in the area of operation? I wanted to know where does the resources come from, especially when Platuja spoke about it, that human and financial resources, and what are normally the arrangements where DWAF asks you to assist, if they both of them to answer this as a chairperson. Thanks.
My first question is directed to Michelle of the Water Board. I think this issue has been raised many a time to find out exactly when is the department is going to finalize at the end, what is the time frame of transferring the company. Maybe the new board can inform us about that. The issue that we raised by the Auditor General with regard to the audit, the indication that there are some areas that need to be taken care of, like the audit committee, the fraud prevention committee, and there were no written delegation of power to the management. All these things taking place as of now.
Thank you. you.
Madam Chair, I am of the opinion that the report goes lame on specific challenges to obtain outstanding money from municipalities and their inadequate controls on payment and misconduct. But then, after that, it doesn't say how many cases, how many people were found guilty on misconduct or not. Same as the controls are concerned. What's the problem as far as controls are concerned? Hot spots on water quality. The very same. Where? What kind of problems do we experience? Was it people dying because of drinking dirty water? What's the cause of that? Transfer of assets. What kind of assets? What's the condition of the assets? And the quality. Skills gap has been covered a lot. But I just want to add this. How does it affect the boat operation? Service delivery, specifically. Quality of water. Labor relations. Problems to solve. I don't know what was the problem. Power, load shedding, how does it affect the boat operation? Thank you very much.
The findings of the disciplinary board of any sanctions imposed by such a board, which are the case of financial misconduct and the county office of all the county authorities in section 81. I'm raising this, I'm not sure if it was the accounting officer or the counselor went out to clarify the board. If you also said that
and your community awareness and training and program, how that is doing. And then we also have some outstanding issues that referred to the delaying the transfer process. All of that is for Sheila. Can you give us an update on your implementation on your fraud prevention plan? By the time you report it to the department, you have not implemented them, including your asset and liability management, but also your improvement with regard to that, because again, you don't seem to have done well or in that area by the time you get reported. I think even the last question from my side comes up. I think all the things you have to mention are because they all relate to that. So if we can quickly have some answers, I'm not sure what the update is of the Indiana. I would suggest as soon as the questions are done, we're really going to try to do that.
Thanks. We will tackle this question all of us. Chair, few which I want to zero in. The issue of the risk policy, we have just adopted the policy in July this year. I'm raising what came out of the audit report of the year under review. The audit committee establishment, they picked up that there was no audit committee, and in line with the outcome, we have already started with the process. We have advertised. The closing date was last week, Friday, and tomorrow we are having a board meeting to appoint from people who have applied the audit committee in line with the PFMA. With regard to the delegation, the resolution was taken in line with the delegation on the 15th of July at a special board meeting. After the outcome of that, we noticed that, and in terms of the guidelines, we have resolved with regard to the delegation. Maybe, Chair, the other one which I would also talk to, the review, whether are we participating on the review of the Water Services Act. Yes, both as Botilo, but also with regard to our coordinating structure like SAU, we have done some submissions. I think one only needs to mention that once there is the review of the Water Services Act, as Water Board, we are just concerned that there are also parallel processes of issues of powers and functions, which might have an impact on the on that at a later stage. Because one of the critical reviews of the Water Services Act is informed by the fact that after it was written, DPLG authorized differently, and it affected the entire country. Now, Grump on one end is busy reviewing the Act, while DPLG is also reviewing the powers and functions. So maybe we might have to ask Parliament to try and synchronize aspects in such a manner that they will be able to speak to each other. They must not act as a silo, but it should be an integrated in terms of our AGR. I think, Chair, I might have to... On the skills development, the how many? I don't know. We have already sent our annual report, and Honorable Member asked that specifics. When you look into page 6 of that, I think, is it page 6? I'm sorry. I will get to, there's a specific page which is telling you precisely, on page 18, we looked into our workplace skills plan, we called all the relevant people who are directly affected, we requested them to prioritize, because the issue of skills development is an ongoing process, Chair. but we identified critical skill shortages for us to deal with. Pages 18 on that tries to address some of the critical issues and specifically to specific kind of training. But let me pause and give my other colleagues to deal with that.
Just on the page the Honourable Person is referring to, I just think in all purpose, you could tell us when they tabled this document. I just think it's when we arrived, after we arrived here. So, you know, we didn't send it so we could study it before we jumped to the mission. I think order, continue.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, Chair, let me, because there my other colleagues will deal with the other question. Honourable Chair, let me start with the most critical question of which was raised by the chairperson and the honourable two honourable members about is Botshelo Water able to respond to this committee about the obligations imposed on it by the PFMA and other legislative and policy imperatives. From this report, it might not be easy to determine that response because we were trying to be specific to the year which is under review, which is 2006-2007. But because this response I'm going to give is about how we as the board and also the newly appointed executive management is responding to those obligations. I must indicate that we have developed a strategic plan which has clear objectives, goals, objectives, and clear performance indicators. And one of the things which we have said we must do is to, as a Botshelo Water Board, is to clear and clean our name in respect of the shareholder. As I'm sitting here, I can confidently say that the DDG is here and the Chief Director are here. It's here and the other managers from DWAF. We know, as Botshelo, and we have made that admission, that we are going to ensure that we take Botshelo out of the league of non-performers into the league of performers. I can indicate to you that since the appointment of the new executives in November last year, and I've just joined this team the 1st of July, we have been able to submit the two quarterly reports for 2007-2008. The third one was in July, but we ensured that the fourth quarterly report is submitted on time. And one of the requirements is that come the 15th of August, all water boards should have submitted their quarterly report, the fourth quarterly report. We have done it yesterday, and we have met the timeline. We have also ensured that the shareholders' compact, which clearly explains the relationship which we have with the minister and the department as a whole, must be submitted, and we'll make sure that we submit it. A question might be asked, are you saying that is a quality job or a quality work? We are saying that because we want to take ourselves out of debt and ensure that Water Services Act, PFMA, other policy imperatives within the water sector, and other legislative requirements tells us what we need to do. We have set ourselves to ensure that we submit because we can only be evaluated, monitored, and also be coached and mentored on the basis of our response to those obligations. So the question is, yes, definitely, we are beginning to respond to the obligations set by that. Just to indicate, to say, the annual report for 2007-2008, we are within the second month of the second month after the end of the financial year. We are busy with compiling our financial statements to prepare them for the auditors to audit. And we are in compliance with the provisions of Section 51 of the PFMA. With the view that come the fifth month, and in fact, Water Services Act even says you must submit within 4 months. We are going to ensure that within 4 months we comply with the Water Services Act to beat PFMA because we want by our own deeds and actions and also ways to ensure that we comply. So we are beginning to have that. And all the committees of the board are meeting. The executive management is meeting as it's supposed to do and is following on what it's supposed to do, and we are responding. are here, they might want to disagree with me or agree with me with that. That is in relation to the obligation. The issue around the audit, we thought we must raise it within the context that the chairperson laid that. Botshelo Water went into serious management crisis to an extent that the minister had to commission a forensic investigation. With that forensic investigation led almost to the complete relief of the managers who were there, together with the CEO at that time. And to an extent that we are busy dealing with the estate of the CEO. Our lawyers are saying, as they are negotiating to get from the trust of the estate of the former CEO, we are negotiating that we must, at least we are going to get about 13 million out of his estate, the money which is the money of the public of this country. So we are dealing with that, we are implementing it. It is unfortunate because, as I indicated, this board started its work on the 1st of July 2007. So most of the meat around these issues will be reflected in the annual report 2007-2008, because this is the work which is being attended to by the present board. And that will be explained. So the issue about the payments by the water services authorities, I'm assessing to state, Chairperson, that the present board, before even it appointed us as executive, has its own outreach program to meet with our water services authorities. And in this case, there are two. To engage with them and say, where is that which we can do? We have inherited a board which we are not going to disown its mistakes, but we want to turn around the corner. And when we came in, we had found that they have already met with the WSA at the political level and also at the senior management level. And it was for us as the new executive that we start implementing what they have agreed upon. So the payment issues, we don't have problems with our water services or their authorities. Of course, in terms of the previous years, including this year, I might say that the situation was such that it was not correct. And also we had to also to deal with our own internal issues. For example, we had to look even in terms of some of the HR issues, which I say, Honorable Chairperson in absentia, we will be able to report in detail. For example, we want policies which are antiquated, obsolete, where some of our officials at a particular grade, they were paid a certain amount of money just for free kilometers. They had spending cards which they were just using all over. So we had to turn around also the culture and what we found in there. And we had to do it within a short space of time. So our report on 2007-2008 will be more detailed around this issue. The debt, I must indicate that because it's still related to that forensic investigation. If the minister could have commissioned that forensic investigation, it tells you that those people who were supposed on a daily basis to manage the affairs of the organization had some challenges themselves, to an extent that the accounting system were not appropriate. Because Botshelo, you remember, just a bit to say, it was Botswana Water Authority, and it became Northwest Water Supply Authority. In 1997, after Water Services Act, it became Botshelo Water. And so it has a particular history. To an extent that we as the new management, assisted by the board, we are also going back to determine even some licenses, because what DWAF is charging us, is charging us on the basis of the water use licenses which they have. And in their own system, and this is what the finance people from DWAF and the finance people from Botshelo are explaining to me, to say, when you were realigning, in the systems, some of the licenses, for example, Tshwane Metro, the transferring, because you remember Bob stretched up to the areas in next to Pretoria called Temba, Hammanskraal. So those areas are no longer part of Botshelo. But when we are extracting, the people who are extracting water for purpose of providing water services in those areas, the licenses in terms of data code might be reflecting a hotel. To an extent that we need to go into this, those details, unpack, and see where the problems might be. We are not also saying that this 34 million might be as a result of the billing problem. We are also trying to look as to how did we come to accumulate such a big and huge debt. It's a matter of, and that is why when we explain to the auditors.
Can I ask you to?
Okay. When we explained to the auditors, they then said that we are going to register this as a going concern and we want to see how you're going to respond to this. The other issue about the audit which was asked, I must just indicate that the payment process, it was that investigation was made by the board on the basis to determine how payments are done within the organization. And we had to employ an outside internal audit to do that work. Because, Chairperson, where I'm seated, I'm still even having challenges about our own journals every day. And journals are your diaries. You record the business transactions every day. And as I'm sitting with you, I'm saying I am putting up a system to ensure that when every transaction in a day must be having a preparer and somebody who must authorize appropriately. So the problem of the payment processes, which we are reflecting there, is that we did not want to also hide it from the annual report to reflect it. And as I'm saying, I think honorable members are saying we might be stingy about the information. It is because some of the issues which we are dealing with will be reflected in terms of, in the next report.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to respond to we have about 15 questions here, and I'll be assisted by capable colleague here. The first issue that has been raised by a few honorable members is that of the debtor payment and what they're owed by municipality. I need to state that in the 10-14 of our presentation, there's a reduction in the debtor payment from 6 to 90 to 54.53 with a target of 45, indicating an improvement from a position that was dire to a position that, in terms of benchmark, has become acceptable. In the sense that we're targeting 45 days, which is what we will be at given the agreement with all our customers, and we are sitting at 53 days. And even the excess over our benchmark is as a result of one municipality, Umkhanyakude, which we did mention. However, we have a payment agreement with Umkhanyakude. And they, in terms of how they have managed the payment agreement now, that they are ahead of the schedule of payment that we agreed with them. So we are in a very positive environment in as far as they are honoring the agreement. So the House can actually relax as far as the aspect is concerned. In terms of the skills in finance, both in a management and in the board, is that for our CFO, we have a chartered accountant assisted in the management by two other junior executives who are BCom accounting graduates. In the board, we have a CA who is a member of the Finance and Audit Committee, and also one member of the board has become honours in accounting. So in terms of the scale, given that we have 156 members of staff, we have quite a strong representation in the field of accounting with regard to members of the board, members of the executive, and the chairperson of the Finance and Audit Committee. The issue of skills development, I'll present to you what has been achieved in this prior, that we have qualified three millwrights. The millwright is an electromechanical technician from members of our staff, and also three technicians in the laboratory that have come in as a trainee technician to obtain the experiential training. We have qualified and we have employed them. We have a relationship with the University of Zululand, whereby we source graduates for both the laboratory and other areas. We currently have a student, two students in the laboratory from the University of Zululand, and we have one student in corporate affairs from the University of Zululand. In as far as the engineers is concerned, we have not developed any as the to the water, but we do have four engineers that we employ, and we are in the process of employing more engineers, and we have in the budget, current budget, a position for a trainee engineer who will be the manager in the office of the CEO, who will actually work with other engineers and executives for developmental purposes. We have also, we're also in the process of accreditation with the CETA, whereby Satuza Water has become a training service provider. The reason why we embarked on this project was to ensure that we can become an accredited skills development facilitator for the municipalities. It's a service that the CETA, in addition to accrediting us, has actually made funds available for us to undertake this venture, so that we can provide the municipalities with the necessary skills. The infrastructural plan vis-a-vis availability of skills. Our infrastructural plan is in two parts. The one part is the refreshment and renewal of existing infrastructure, which has reached the end of its life. We are spending in the region of 290 million for that purpose. And the rest of the infrastructural plan is with regard to a brand new infrastructure for water services delivery. We are on schedule. In fact, we are in the process of commissioning one of the projects at the moment. We're not running we have not been affected by the lack of skills in the country. We do have the skills to actually execute all of these projects. And in addition to that, in addition to our internal skills, we use external skills from the private sector to help us with the implementation of the infrastructural project. On draft projects, draft projects are resolved both internally with our own resources and external resources. And when funding comes, there's two sources of funding. The funding that comes from ourselves, and which is in the form of a seed capital. There's also funding that comes from DWAF. We then allocate the cost of those resources to the project, so that they are properly accounted where they are actually being utilized.
Our deal with issues surrounding, I know one of the members, some of the members did mention issues of disclosure and compliance. Chateau Water has also gone through a period where there's been a transition in the Department of Finance. And last year was, for this particular year we are reporting in, was particularly challenging because of the transition and the resignation for some members of staff being released for various issues. So there was a serious gap that was created then in terms of trying to get our house in order in terms of meeting the deadline. I think that was one of the issues. I think added to that, one of the other critical issues was that we had 13 finance computers stolen from the department. Again, it's a security issue that also had a serious setback in terms of how the processes meeting deadlines were affected. The other issue was around the audit itself. Now, I think one of the best practices that is now being talked about is the fact that we need to change auditors in general terms, even private business, every so often, 3 to 5 years. We had auditors for 20 years. where during that 20 years, obviously, especially the year in question, we had not complied with new standards that had been enacted, and our auditors then had not picked up those compliance issues. The coming in of the new auditors in this 2006-07 financial year actually created a huge platform for us to actually realize some of the gaps that we had in terms of reporting, especially in terms of complying with the general accounting standards, particularly areas surrounding research costs, where research costs previously, it was accepted to capitalize those costs, but obviously the new standards are now saying we actually need to expense them in the year of inheritance. Those, I think, pretty much are the challenges that we face in terms of compliance and disclosure requirements. The other key matter in terms of compliance was the trust that has been mentioned. Now, this trust was set up in 1996 as a special purpose vehicle to fund mineral drilling. Now, again, the issue of disclosure at the time and in terms of how the standards have changed, it was not really necessary except probably by way of a note. But because of the significance of that trust, we now needed to consolidate the operations of the trust within Shatuzi. And unfortunately, in our position, we realized that the trust was being managed by the initiators of the scheme, which was the Rand Merchant Bank. They provided the auditors, they did the management of the financial accounts, and we realized last year when we had to comply with that the accounts of the trust themselves had only been audited up to 2005. And to get the 06 and all in the future numbers actually proved quite difficult. Added to that, the records of the Master of the High Court in terms of trustees had not been updated when we started to follow those issues. And so we realized that the one member of the trust was deceased, the other one had resigned, and they declined to sign the trust on the basis that they had not been involved intimately with what has been going on in the trust. So that created a technical problem for us from a disclosure perspective. And obviously that was one of the main reasons why our qualification, that is one of the reasons, in fact that was the key reason why our financials were qualified on the basis of the trust account not being audited. As a business, as a standalone business in Shatuzi, excluding that special purpose vehicle, the indicators, the financial ratios, the viability, the financial information indicates we are a very strong and stable entity. And obviously the trust now has come to its useful life in 2006. Again, I think the process of just making sure the Master of the High Court changes the trustees has only been approved as recent as July of this year. So the trustees have changed. We have now requested an audit of the 06 and 07 numbers, which we believe will be in line with our current audit plan, so that at least that matter is resolved. I must also say that this is the first qualification for Shatuzi in terms of their account. So again, a technical glitch that we had not been dealt with appropriately in the prior years, and we were coming up with it. We do not expect a qualification this year. In fact, I think just to touch on the added issue of deadlines of our audit, our auditors are currently on site. They are actually on target. They are not even working overtime in terms of trying to meet the current reporting deadline. So we have made enough plans and we've done enough work to ensure that those requirements of meeting the set deadline will be achieved. And I honestly believe, as I sit here, that we will not be sitting in the same position next year because of the processes that we've put in place. In terms of the asset and liability management, we have an old policy that has not been updated, but I think when I look at the financial ratios from Shatuzi Water, especially the current ratio, which I presume I think the members look at, we are 1.6 to 1 as opposed to a perfect target of 2 to 1. I mean, 1.6, I think, even in business terms, is still a very good ratio, even though, yes, we are still trying to make sure that we get to the target ratio. Quite a number of steps have been put in place. We, for instance, I mean, our negotiation of the rates with the DBSA in terms of our loan from 16 to 13, obviously that releases cash onto our current assets, and obviously that should improve that ratio. We have also renegotiated certain loans. Again, this is now happening post the period we are reporting on. But I think the measures we have put in place to contain our current assets, to streamline those assets, should ensure we are actually in a much better footing. And I think deliberately the board has actually set us targets to ensure that we go along with that. So I think overall, from a financial perspective, even touching on the issue of debt as mentioned, the moving from 96 to 90 to 53 where we are, again, we can clearly in our minds see a lot of improvement has happened. The skill shortages or the gaps that we had in the finance department have been addressed with recruitment and with various training initiatives that have been put in place. So again, we are quite confident that moving forward, we should be able to address all these issues of assets, of skills, as well as, I think, ensuring that we have the continued viability of business.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to touch on my colleague here. He's said quite a lot with regards to the issues surrounding the trust. There was a comment made as to say, why did it take 2 years to dissolve the trust? I think the primary delay there was in the audit. It was appointing the new auditors there to learn our business. And also, there was a resolution passed in 2006 where it was lodged with the master of the High Court to change the trustees. And we, in fact, found out 8 months later after a response from the master that this had never been carried out. So this delayed that by 8 months, and then it took another just over 2 months to appoint the new trustees. But as my colleague said, we safely say that by October 2008, we hope to have the trust wound up, but we're hoping to have it wound up before then. And in terms of the fraud prevention plan, the fraud prevention plan has been passed by the board and has been implemented within the last 6 months. And just to touch on the asset and liability management, as my colleague said, there is a policy, but there are other aspects of the asset and liability management which form part of other policies within Umfutuzi Water, and this is, for example, our delegations of authority.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we obviously have extremely serious time and problem here, and we will still have to have consent for a long list of organizations from the civil society, and I want to ask that you do the following. I am pretty sure that you've got follow-up questions to them also. And I have a list between now and lunchtime and after lunch. We're supposed to be back here also. And I'm getting lots of messages here about the fact that we must speed up because other people want to get out here. Now, my dilemma is water boards must account and the water boards must be dealt with in terms of the public finance management. And so I want to ask your indulgence in this instance. It's not the only thing that's on our agenda. I can only offer Isandala 2 minutes to deal with this aspect. The alternative is you will have to speak after lunch. Now I see next to you a face that is really inviting me to be scared. because I'm afraid to say everyone, this is how Parliament works.
you know, you come here, the time is 9 o'clock, it gets to 10 o'clock, and all of that stuff. So I think there are some things that are outside of our control many times, and so as much as I need to be flexible here, yeah, I have to ask your indulgence also to do that. So okay, she's smiling now, so that means I can... Ikangala, I'm afraid to say you are really, because it's through you that we are now also waiting for the court, and we're supposed to have all of them done at the same time. So I can only give you 2 minutes.
Hello, Chairperson, thank you. I won't go through the details, but as we well aware that the Kampala was established in terms of the logic 277, Health Department covered that number 18694 in 1998. Now, what has happened is there were board members appointed, 9 of them, I just go quickly because of time. And then in Kangala Water Board is servicing these areas, Tokashias, Moroka, Tembisile, areas in Mswaledi Municipality, Greater Mabulu Hall, which is currently now Kupune District, and Kungwini Local Municipality. The staff managers and staff in October, Mr. Mtweni was appointed by the Minister to become the CEO of the board, and then he resigned in 2003, and then Mr. Rupen passed over and appointed to the CEO until 2005. Currently, where we are standing, the club personnel and assets of the Kangala Water Board, we only have only 4 staff members which are currently employed in the water board. Now, in terms of the financials, the areas of supply and the consumption of the water currently out of the 2 purification works, which is Nasa Priere and Bronco Strait, a total of about 1.5 million cubic liters is being supplied. And the bills that have gone to these municipalities as from the year 2006-2007 amount to 35,478.040 million. Out of that, we had also, out of which is almost 96% of the entire scheme. If you look at our financials, trying to fit in everything in the 2 minutes, is that the report of the financial statements that the water board has received a qualified report or opinion, and based on that, the qualified opinion was on the following. Of matter that the Kangala audit did not have the internal audit function, and it did not submit the relevant treasury budget for 2007 financial year as required by the section 44A of the PSMA, and also in Kangala did not submit the expense to the minister of which the financial figures of 2007. And then if we go further and look at the in terms of income, you will see that in terms of the record of sales for 2007, 2006, 2007, you will see there that we were looking at more or less about 89 million. And then you will see that currently the assets that are still sitting in the books of the municipality are about 67,000. And the trade and tradables and also the equity there. So really, it is clear that the in terms of the sales being produced by the water board, it is unable to recover the cost. And the costs that are being recovered on a monthly basis are just there to service the rental of the building and the payment of salaries to the 4 staff members. Basically, I'm trying just to fit in everything within my community.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's really difficult to go through the notes. I'm going just to base on the monthly water loss by July to June, July 2006 to June 2007. Perhaps they could expound on the cause of the loss
debtors' day to Bushet, to Ikangala is their debtors' day. I'm not sure how many days are you working on. We only had it here. How many days on average are you working? Unless you could tell them to listen to the gentleman that I met. I'll do this in questions then, because I take exception to the reference to state agency. Because state agency doesn't deal with the difficulties that I address as an engineer, for example. It is other staff that are mentioned here. And then if you look at the board meeting and related committee on page 9 in the annual report, it actually gives you a schedule of board meetings, committee attendance. It doesn't say out of a total of what, if you would look. I mean, one person attended 23 in total, and another one 5 out of what. And also the debtor's day is not mentioned anywhere. So I find the remark on page 18 absolutely irrelevant. That was not my question. My question was on specifics like engineers. But I'll put a question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I actually wanted to put some questions with regard to the qualified opinion from the Inkangala on the basis that they are saying that they didn't comply with the public finance management test. And I also wanted to know why. And the other thing that is also indicated here is that they didn't have internal information. So my question is, is it because maybe they don't have qualified people who can do finance or audit or go to the accountants in their work or in their staff? So I just want to find out if those people are qualified people are not employed or they don't have, how do they how are they going to get it unqualified people for the next time? Thank you very much.
There's really no one that you're talking to here to account. I've spoken to the department yesterday and I said we must deal with the annual report. So you can ask him questions, but I can promise you. I think that we should rather sit with that decision and say that this is the route that we need to go, because this is the reality that we are facing.
water quality and water challenges by the civil society organization. Now, as you are speaking up, members are asking for a comfort break, and I ask you to do it in 2 minutes because in any way they must
The issue that they're going to be dealing with now is not on you. Now you have to buy it and it's expensive. The whole set was all bad. About 7 volumes, Thank you. What document is that? What is it? Why couldn't Ikangala deliver? Could they not reason to anything? The document wasn't ready. There's no actual annual report. It was just, I have to speak to that lady. I can't circle after lunch. The meeting is probably going to go until 4 o'clock. I can't. I must tell Peter so that he can get another monitor to come in after lunch. Did they say we're living in a break for lunch?
Yeah, but there's a woman in my question. I have to say, but again, I'm not sure who's doing that.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dipo Solo. I'm from Green South Africa, but I'm organizing in the Limpopo province around Mokopane. Around June, of course, we were here before this portfolio committee. We made our submission in writing in terms of quality water and the contamination of water and water monitoring report done by Karen Bosman. Today is just a follow-up to what we have just made in the previous hearing. One, in terms of the Constitution of South Africa, Act 108 of 1996, Section 27 is stipulating around question of food, water, and health services. And it is the prerogative of the state to make sure that they provide a quality of water to the people of this country. And up to date, communities in Limpopo, as we indicated during the last hearing, they are still drinking the contaminated water. And the water is not good for human consumption, as we indicated during the last hearing, that the water is having a high level of nitrogen. We have recommended the following, that one, we as a civil society movement, as staff, as municipalities, as portfolio committee, we must encourage the communities not to drink the contaminated water, like in our case, in the area, because there are some possible diseases that may occur as a result of this water is not good for human consumption. Two, we are saying this water, it was contaminated because of the mining operation which is taking place in our area by Anglo Platinum. Before their operation in 1990, the water, it was clean, it was not contaminated, but after they started their operation and after we have commissioned Karen Bosman to take water samples, we found out that the water is contaminated. And Anglo Platinum is trying to shift the responsibilities to the local authorities, the water district municipality and Magalagona municipality. But we are urging the portfolio commission not to allow this, not to allow Anglo Platinum to shift the responsibilities of cleaning the environment and giving the communities a clean water, because it is not the government or the local authorities which degraded our environment. Communities must also have access to medical examination, because if you have gone through the last submission document, Karen Bosman recommended that immediately the communities must stop drinking that water, and secondly, they must consult with the health practitioners to check if they have already been affected or not. For we are also encouraging the portfolio committee to urge the local authorities, service providers, to work with the affected communities where the water is contaminated, than taking sides with the big general corporations like Anglo Platinum. Ever since we left this portfolio committee around June, what the company is doing, they are providing clean water to the two schools in my village. But it is not addressing the problem, because the community also is contaminated. These kids, when they are getting out of the educational environment, they are still drinking the same contaminated water. And to me, or to us, for the company to deliver the clean water only at the two schools is not a solution. In terms of the way forward, we are calling upon this parliamentary committee because we know, we are also understanding that the election campaign is coming. You will be leaving the offices to go to various constituencies in the country. We are calling upon you to visit Limpopo, KZN, Northwest. Limpopo is in two occasions. In the eastern limb in Beresford, where there are several mining companies, there are also contamination sites. Environment has been degraded. And in Mokopane, former Bosetas, where I'm coming from, to come there and see on your own the type of poison water that we are drinking almost every day. We are also calling upon you to put a pressure to the company to give those communities in Mokopane, Amulekana, Abila, where 28 families refused to pay the way for mining, and as a result, they were cut off like water, and are getting water from the zip just next to the stream, which is passing via the operation of Anglo Platinum. And there is a high level of nitrates, about 75%. Of high level of nitrates within the water sources that has been found. And lastly, this portfolio committee must not really allow the corporations, not only Anglo Platinum, it might be Rio Tinto, BHP, Anglo, or whatever. We must not allow them to pollute our environment throughout their operations. I thank you.
Eric, here, I'm not going to ask you one by one questions.
support your claim to the extent of respective measures and also to the state station. I also apologize. I have stayed this for the power point presentation, but regrettably this is not possible, so I invite you please to look at your hard copy. This is a follow-up report to the report that I have submitted orally and in written form to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on the 5th of June. I simply wish to discuss it tonight. It is a concise report with regard to the relevant acts or the legal measures that pertain to the subject matter in agitation. First of all, it almost strikes the same that our constitution allows for the argument that it's not harmful to health or well-being. It also allows to secure its development that is from an ecological point of view sustainable, and while at the same time promoting justifiable economic and social development. This implies that an action-causing solution cannot be regarded as a sustainable use of natural resources and cannot be allowed. On this basis, we also have the National Water Act and the National Environmental Management Act, which has defined pollution as a human-induced change in the environment that has an adverse impact. And here I wish to emphasize not only a harmful impact currently, but also a potentially harmful impact upon human health and well-being, aquatic and non-aquatic biota, and also the quality of the water resource. From the Constitution and the relevant legal measures, that the intention of the legal measures is not to allow pollution to occur, to address with promptitude sometimes as a matter of emergency, and to criminalize a lack of action to promptly address it. Therefore, there is a criminal responsibility that because of non-compliance or because of infractions of environmental principles or laws that should be enforced. With regard to the vulnerable time, I also will recapitulate very briefly the 120 years of gold mining activity. As the hundreds of official public domain scientific reports, but I especially highlight the Water Research Committee report of 12/14 of 2006, stated that there are elevated levels of heavy metals, toxic and radioactive heavy metals such as cobalt, copper, arsenic, zinc, and uranium absorbed into the sediments. The sources of the pollution are due not only to point discharges, that is, some controlled, some uncontrolled, but also due to runoff of contaminated sites and groundwater discharge. This hazard will therefore remain after closure of dams. It will be a long-term hazard. In terms of the environmental management program report, it's both gold fields and also because of other gold exchanges and the other operating gold mines, this hazard will continue not for decades but for centuries. Some of these hazardous sites exist off mine property. It is for that reason that it is imperative that the institutional memory must be alive. At present, the uranium and all the other heavy metals are absorbed in the sediment, but under plausible conditions, these heavy metals can become remobilized and solubilized into the water column. the one that I will focus on today that has now emerged in the situation and is acid mine draining, that is the mine water that is being recharged and used for mobilization and the transportation of these people into the water, also into the Tweedle Beach plant. Mine closure, we are expecting, and this is based on the 12-14 report, the following effects to occur. There will first be a low flow regime as mine flows and stop pumping the water, and the treated water input will therefore immediately cease, and this will compromise the reducing concentration. This will then cause the oxidization of the heavy metals that are absorbed in the sediment or trapped in the sediment. This will then become the source of acid mine drainage. After this will be followed a groundwater report bound phase during which the water's levels will then recharge or will rise in underground water working. This has already happened in 2002 in the properties of Harmony Gold. In the land and for tank door area, there was a leakage that occurred and the water as an emergency measure was pumped into the Robinson Lake. The Robinson Lake at that time was a recreational area. Today it is a declared radiation area with uranium levels probably 30 times above background uranium levels. It also contains 16 milligrams per liter uranium. The regulatory limit in terms of draft regulations for the uranium in drinking water is 0.07 milligrams per litre and for irrigation 0.01 milligrams per litre. This situation can be foreseen for the entire upper and lower Bonnefontein Strait as well as the Clear Ruby Strait area. The current situation is therefore not sustainable in the longer term. With regards to the tent, I asked before we entitled a hydrogeological assessment of acid mine drainage impact in the Western Basin of Kanteng Province. It was found that the decanting volume presently are between 18 and 36 megalitres a day. In January 2008, it was 15 megalitres a day. Treatment plant could not cope with it, and therefore, untreated water was once again discharged. It is at the continental water divide, so it discharges into the south, which is the Vaal River catchment, as well as into the north, which is the Limpopo catchment. An unqualified volume of water is escaping substrata. At the moment, Harmony is merely dealing with its surface water that is decanting and not with the substrata or underground water that is. There are also many factors and fissures and faults which will result into the decant flowing substrata. The objective to manage the decant was to pump it lower than the spot plant compartment water where the climate of humankind is located. This will quickly show you going back. The red area is the area that is under irrigation. It starts on the Krugersdorp area, Randfontein area, and it flows towards Potchefstroom, towards the south, and the Vaal River catchment to the north. It flows through the Crocodile River, the Hartbeespoort Dam, and then eventually into the Limpopo River catchment. These are the legal measures pertaining to the subject matter in attestation. With regards to water use licenses, it imperative to determine the ecological reserve as well as the human needs and thereafter issue a water license. It is not guaranteed, however, all the gold mines in the area still operate under water use licenses that were issued before the promulgation of the National Water Act in 1998. The reserve has not yet been determined. With regards to the Bonnefontein Strait, a long-term responsibility, we are dealing with uranium with its radioactive daughter products, uranium, the isotope 238,
stays radioactive for 10 to the power of 10 years. Most of the radioactive properties or radiological hotspots are off mine properties, so institutional memory must be maintained. These heavy metals, which are currently absorbed in the sediment, can be mobilized by acid mine drainage. The acid mine drainage occurred in 2002 in the Randfontein operations of Harmony. The inflow had a serious impact upon the, for example, Robinson Lake and other sites. The Robinson Lake is now declared a radioactive site with radioactive levels and uranium levels 40,000 times above the background uranium levels, with 60 milligrams per liter uranium in the water. There is no living aquatic biota. The same acidic mine water is now flowing into the Tweelopie spray as well as into the upper border for St. Sprays. Harmony at the moment is treating only the surface water decant, and an unqualified volume of water is decanting downstream or substrata. In order to manage that, they have lowered the environmental critical level. The acid mine drainage will impact, and the impacts will be with enormous ramifications. Acid mine drainage caused depletion of dolomite. The Swartkrans compartment is where the self-contained caves and the cranial of humankind are located. In a period of 2.5 years, the acid mine drainage has caused a void of 8,960 cubic meters, which under normal conditions would have taken millions of years to create. It is not only the cradle of humankind that is at risk, it is also the residents that are making use of the stream water as well as the borehole water for potable usages, that is human usage, as well as irrigation and watering of the animals. As I have alluded to, the fact is that it takes place, the decant, on an intercontinental water divide, so it impacts upon two catchments. This image from Google would show the flow of the pollution plume. It migrates downstream from the Robinson Lake on your left-hand side down towards the wetlands on your right-hand side. As a result of the decant, DWAF has issued a cautionary notice and also a directive to the operating mines within the area. The directive stated that no water in any way related to the decant be allowed to flow into the Tweelopie spray. This shows the hotspots. With regards to the Western Basin Void Decant Technical Meetings, which are regularly convened as the public, we have access to these meetings. It is laudable that in a very transparent manner, we are informed of the monitoring that is taking place. Regrettably, monitoring or transparency is not enforcement or compliance. The directive is constantly, habitually transgressed. There's habitual non-conformance. There is no enforcement. The manganese, the aluminium, the sulfate levels, all are unfit for human consumption. With regards to the uranium, it is allowed that 0.235 milligrams per liter may be discharged into the Tweelopie spray. However, the regulatory limit in terms of DWAF for uranium is 0.07 milligrams per liter, and for irrigation 0.01 milligrams per liter. That would imply that the water is unfit for human and animal consumption. The objective now of DWAF, as was expressed by Mr. Mariewski, instead of enforcing non-compliance, they will now increase the limitations in order for the mines to be compliant with the directive. That unfortunately will render the water once again unfit for human and animal consumption. The Tweelopie spray is already a Class 5 river. There is no living aquatic biota. The foreseeable impacts can be seen from what was reported recently by the CSIR. It was found that in a ball, how far removed from the decant area there is, in fact, the same chemical composition of the water as in the decant water, which shows that a plume is now migrating substrata. It came to the conclusion that the accelerated deterioration might be approaching a critical threshold value beyond which mixing with much better quality cast groundwater will no longer have the moderating influence it has in the past. In other words, the simple statement, dilution is no solution for pollution. Now, on the 21st of December, Mr. Marius gave this issue a statement to say how GLAD will direct it. They will appoint a Bonnefontein Regulator Steering Committee. The NNR will chair the Water Regulator Steering Committee. Regrettably, at every forum, whether it's the Mooi River Dry Forum or the Bonnefontein Dry Forum or the Western Basin Boys Decant Forum, the NNR are never present. The Tweedhoopy Strait is as radioactive as is the water that has been pumped into the Robinson Lake because it's from exactly the same source. So we are not merely dealing with the chemical toxicity of uranium, we're also dealing with radioactivity. The NNR, we respectfully, but with great urgency, request to please be present at these meetings and to cooperate because cooperation is part of the Constitution. With regards to the other aspirational statement, it stated that WAF on the 21st of December will issue all water use licenses to the mine. However, discharges into the Bonnefontein Strait catchment have not been licensed under the National Water Act. No investigations have been done to determine the ecological reserve or the basic human needs. And further, no environmental impact assessment has been conducted. The deposition by means of atmospheric pollution, that is toxic gas and radioactive gas fallout on plants and on soil and on pasture grounds, that eventually also flows into the receiving water courses. This is the radioactive, it's a radiometric image, an airborne radiometric image, indicating that all the heavy metals are currently absorbed in the wetlands, which has now reached saturation points and will become secondary sources of contamination. This is an ordinary picture taken at any time of the year. The most of the tailings dams are unvegetated, which allows for large quantities of radioactive dust fallout and toxic gas fallout. This was taken by Dr. Carl Albrecht, the head researcher of CANSA. The measured uranium levels on this Geiger counter show that it is significantly elevated to regulatory limits. This is in an area that where the people from Kutsong daily pass through in great numbers. This shows unremediated tailings on one of the mines. This shows a public area in Carltonville. The radioactive measurements was taken by the National Nuclear Regulator. It was 548 millisieverts per annum. The regulatory limit is 1 millisievert per annum. Yet since July 2007, it had not been rehabilitated or remediated, notwithstanding the aspirational statements of the Department of Water Affairs. A team of experts, it was stated, would be appointed, and that was indeed so. However, we asked what was the process by which the team was appointed, who were the parties paying for the team of experts, and what was the terms of reference for the team of experts. That remains unaddressed, and no answers have been furnished. It was also stated that the mines, in terms of the polluter pays principle, which is an intrinsic principle in terms of the National Water Act, the NEMA, as well as the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, we still have received no information concerning how the mines are contributing financially towards their remediation and rehabilitation. It also, one of the aspirational statements of GWAF was that the approach will get community involvement. The communities will be the final recipients of the land use and the water use. They will also be the recipients of at the contamination and the hazards and the health. At this point, there has been no engagement or interaction with any communities. Therefore, this is our way forward. We make a very strong appeal that the recommendations and the findings of the Water Research Commission number 1215 should be taken into consideration. Acid mine drainage does not only generate from tailings dams on unlined dolomitic ground, it also generates from rock dumps, so it is a significant generator of acid mine drainage, and also the footprint that is left after tailings have been removed, as well as there should be monitoring of the extent of contaminated plumes. Mines should not close and issue monitoring plans or closure plans in isolation. There should be an integrated approach because all these sub-basins are interconnected. Not only the Westrand sub-basins, but also the Westrand and the Far Westrand basins. It also mentions there that there should be management options to mitigate groundwater contamination after closure. At present, it is vague or non-existent. These groundwater contamination plumes will continue, as I have previously adverted to the reports, for not decades, but for centuries. Our call is also on the amendment of the Constitution of the Far West Rand Water Dolomitic Association, that was formed in 1964 before enabling legislation had been promulgated, so it makes no provision for the recent principles of our enabling legislation. It should also address not only dewatering issues and sinkhole formations, but also rewatering issues, which include pollution and also increased seismological activities as pre-mining flow patterns restore themselves. And it should also address the renewed sinkhole formations. It should also address the remaining historical liabilities of the Far West Rand Dolomitic Water Association. Large tracts of land have been bought out by the association, and they remain at this stage still unrehabilitated and cannot be used for any agricultural or industrial or residential purposes. So this is our strong appeal then, and I wish just once again to thank you very much for having given us this opportunity.
Thank you very much,
Madam Chair, if I could just ask our representative from Cal to speak while I set up the PowerPoint, because it's connected to Mariette, and then I'll follow the next speaker. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Kate Tiffington, and I'm from the Center for Applied Legal Studies based at Fitz University in Johannesburg. I'm going to speak briefly today about some issues around free basic water, the policy, the implementation of the policy at the local level. We were involved quite extensively in surveying municipalities and their provision of water services across the country. We've also been involved in a recent case in Piri and Soweto over the city of Johannesburg implementation of its free basic water policy. So I can talk briefly around some of the issues that have arisen for us and some problems that we've encountered in terms of its implementation. And just to say initially that in terms of the water rights related legislative and policy framework, South Africa is very progressive. I mean, it has a free basic water policy, which was initiated in 2001. 2002, there was a free basic water implementation strategy, and it set out some guidelines and that municipalities are supposed to follow in terms of providing free basic water to the people in their jurisdiction. The free basic water is supposed to be provided by municipalities to poor households to gain access to a basic or minimum supply of water. The national policy stipulates this as being less known amounts being 25 litres per person per day, which is equivalent to 6 kiloliters per household per month. This is working on an average of 8 people per household. GLAD acknowledges in its policy and in various other documents that this should ideally be increased to 50 litres per person per day. This is currently what some of the metropolitan municipalities are providing. And this is what international experts have said, and we believe as well, that 50 litres per person per day is the minimum, actually, not 25. Most municipalities are, if they are providing free basic water, they are providing. Just first to say that there are still some municipalities who are not providing free basic water, even though they are meant to be. And there's no enforcement of the policy at the local level. This is 5-6 years later after the policy has been decided on. Another big issue that we've come across is how much free basic water is provided to people. This is left up to, as I said before, local government is given the mandate to decide how to implement the free basic water policy and to whom it provides its basic food. And when it comes to amount of water, the policy says 25 litres per person per day. We say, and as I said before, do I even acknowledge that this is insufficient? In the recent case in the Johannesburg High Court, the Mazibuko and others, the city of Johannesburg and others, the judge stated that in periods like it was obvious that there were a minimum number of people per household in periods, 16, not 8. And that in these households as well, there are lots of people living as backyard dwellers on the property. So that when you're taking the 6 kiloliters per household per month allocation to come, that is definitely not stretching to reach all these people. So a lot of people just do not have any access to water at all on these properties. And that's clearly highly problematic when it comes to making sure that everyone has access to sufficient amounts of water. Another problem when it comes to implementing free-based water is how to target people who qualify for it. We find that most municipalities, when they do provide free basic water, are using what is known as the indigency register to target people, to target poor households. It has been clearly proven that the indigency registers across municipalities, including the metros, is chronically underrepresentative of those who qualify, meaning that most municipalities would miss you, that there's just, a very small percentage of those who qualify are actually registered as indigent. Between those people are not getting free basic water allocation. Reason for this, a lot of times just that people don't know about the indigency register, the most vulnerable and marginalized don't have access to information about it. There's also fear and stigma attached to registering. The process is to sign up for this is very burdensome and onerous on people, poor households, who are the ones who are trying to sign up. It requires lots of, there's so many requirements, it's very, very time-consuming, burdensome, and it's also highly, highly exclusionary. Most municipalities, you have to have South African ID, you have to be a municipal account holder, you normally have to own property, so, that really excludes a lot of people, undocumented, vulnerable people, people who are not municipal account holders. There's a whole range of people who, and these are particularly the most vulnerable, marginalized people who are being excluded by using the indigency register. Another group that's not including this are poor tenants living as unlawful occupiers in buildings in the cities. So basically, to sum up with that, we believe, and it has been proven, that the indigency register is not at all an effective method of targeting people at work, and other mechanisms need to be looked into to target people at work. It's just not getting to the people who need it. Another aspect of free basic water provision is that most people are required when they sign up to the indigency register to access free basic water to get punitive attached to that. One of them being you have to have a very strict sort of trickle feeder device installed. It's like a little pinprick device that's put into the pipe to mean that your water is severely restricted. You can hardly get into it, or you have to stand in there, but you fill up a bucket. That is just unacceptable. Another mechanism that's being posted on the households when they sign up are pre-tandem meters. These basically cut off after the 6 kiloliters per household per month realistic amount is used up. It's basically a very aggressive credit control mechanism that's put onto poor households in order to make sure that they don't use more than the realistic amount. In the recent Mazibuko judgment, in the case in period 106, the judge found that in Soweto, in period Soweto, the installation of 10 meters onto poor households was unlawful and unconstitutional. And it's safe to say that this goes for other similar placed households in similar circumstances and similar poor suburbs. The fact that there's still municipalities are wanting to implement these in order to sort of raise revenue in order for cost recovery purposes, it's highly worrying that there's needs based off thinking of community. Briefly going into another aspect of previous quarter is that of the tariff structures within which previous quarter is allocated. Most of the times tariff pricing is not aggressive at all. It basically prices out poor households from using any more than the free basic amount, which was stated earlier, so it's not sufficient adequate for healthy and dignified life anyway. So the problem is that people are just not gaining access to water. It's not affordable. There's so much more that can happen in pricing structures. Municipalities don't have the capacity to undergo affordability and elasticity of demand studies, which are required. There's so much potential in this aspect, and because of this, that's local municipalities, most of them do not have the capacity or the expertise to look into these. They really are left open to abuse. There's a lot. Basically, what needs to be looked into are pricing structures. The poor at the bottom end, so people have access to sufficient water, affordable, and that at the same time penalizes excessive consumption. Which we call hedonistic consumption, water, people going up swimming pools, watering gardens, that kind of thing. But that kind of water usage needs to be penalized with entire structures, and that would cross subsidize as well, lower end users having access to more water. And finally, a point about two groups of people who we found very much left out when it comes to accessing free basic water because of structural problems. The one group, and these are groups which are mediated with the municipality or the water service provider through third-party intermediaries. The one situation where this occurs is in farms, privately owned land, so that farm dwellers and farm workers have to mediate through the municipality, and their access to water is through the farmer. There are some guidelines in place, but we still find a lot of problems with people on farms and privately owned land accessing the municipality. Allocation of getting sufficient water. Another situation we find is in the urban areas, in inner cities, where poor tenants, people living in collapsed section of high school units, people living as unlawful occupiers for various reasons in inner city buildings, also have sort of big problems with them accessing the waste water amount because of this sort of non-existent relationship with municipalities. And not only are these people not even getting sort of the previous water amounts, I mean their water just been disconnected because of various reasons, problems with sort of this intermediary relationship that is occurring there. That's basically some of the problems that we found, and thank you for
accommodating all of the CSOs given the difficult time constraints this morning. This entire gathering of CSOs today is largely funded through DWAF, and we really want to extend our thanks to DWAF. It's a program called Turning Advocacy into Action that is trying to strengthen the voice of civil society organizations to be able to be more articulate in the concerns that they're facing in their communities, and addressing the portfolio committee is a really important step in that endeavor. So thank you for taking the time to look at it.
Not
to
look
at
that,
also,
you can
criticize
for
this.
Yeah.
The question is whether they listen.
Yeah.
So where I'd like to start off today is really just trying to address a growing concern of weak public accountability mechanisms that exist
in terms of the current regulation framework that we have in place. And if one looks at the National Water Services Act of 1998, there's a very clear articulation within it of a distinction between the water service authority and water service provider function. And according to the distinction, formal accountability mechanisms lie with the water service authority, which has a local regulatory supervisory responsibility, while the provider is responsible for implementation and operation. And the national regulator is really being established to regulate the authority function. Unfortunately, the reality is that in practice over the last decade, the skills requirement at the municipal level is quite thin in terms of being able to have a strong operations running the provision aspect and then a very strong multi kind of disciplinary skilled person to have an oversight and supervisory position over and above the WSP function. And so what's happened is that in large part there hasn't been a separation of these two functions, and therefore the quality of information coming out with regard to the performance of operations has been quite thin on the ground. And this has a huge impact in terms of the ability of the national regulator to be able to actually have credible information. So part of the challenges in addition to this is that it's led to a situation where there's enormous responsibility on municipalities to deliver services very rapidly in a manner that's very target-driven, which has created a framework of delivery that's top-down, supply-driven, and has displaced smaller community-driven mechanisms that at one point in time in the past did offer much greater accountability at the local level. For instance, village water committees, which in rural areas led to a much greater investment in O&M, a much greater ability to address service delivery disruptions as they arose, which municipalities that are managing disparate communities are often in a very difficult position. The consequences is really neglecting the impact of the enormous investment that is going into the water sector. There's so much of an emphasis on outcomes as opposed to, on outputs as opposed to outcomes, i.e., in the enormous amount that we're investing in infrastructure, to what degree is this sufficient investment in maintenance, for instance? And some of the negative aspects of the pressures that municipalities are facing to focus on getting pipes in the ground quickly and getting the taps working is neglect of process. So very, very poor public disclosure of documents. When CSOs want to conduct research to find out whether WSAs or WSPs are compliant, they are often met with closed doors where business plans are not available, where the basic information in order to be able to assess the functioning of these water service entities is not possible. Secondly, the whole involvement of the public in the water service development plans is very limited. The reality is that it's often consultant-driven. It's put in the library for a couple of days for the public to engage with. And this is supposed to be something that involves the public to drive development with the municipality. So I think it's one of the negative consequences of the pressures that municipalities are facing. And I think the only way in trying to resolve some of these shortcomings is really ensuring a commitment to deepening democracy to address these concerns. And I know that DWAF in large part is very, very committed to this, but the challenge really lies at the local level, where municipalities and the pressures that they're facing are increasingly becoming authoritarian in their approach to service delivery. So I'd like to point to a few alternatives as ways of strengthening the oversight capacity at the local level through civil society involvement. Really, it has to start through public education, where people begin to understand how water services work, what their rights and responsibilities are, and in doing so can begin to play a greater oversight and monitoring role of service delivery. So there are a few initiatives that are underway to this effect, some that are municipally driven, some that are through SWAF funding. For instance, the Citizens' Voice in the Regulation of Water Services that was piloted in Cape Town 2 years ago and is now being extended to other metros across the country. The CSO regulation reference group, which meets on a quarterly basis with the regulator to ensure better feedback mechanisms in terms of what's happening around regulatory issues. And Ikekwini has a very innovative approach in terms of liaising with focus groups across the socioeconomic spectrum to hear what the public has to say. And there is an element of responsiveness there that incentivizes the community to come to these meetings because they see changes happening as a result of the issues they bring to the table. I'll just speak to a second about the citizen's voice to extend it, because I think it's, while there are so many problems that all of us are bringing to you today, I think it's also important to say there are some good things happening and really how do we build on it. And the Raising Citizens' Voice is largely trying to look at how we deliver services, not just what we deliver, and trying to go back to the whole process of delivering services in a more community-responsive way. So it focuses on, in the short term, on raising public education about how services work, what people's roles and responsibilities, in order to be able to, in the medium term, develop the local monitoring capacity. And the longer term objective is to be able to have citizens and CSOs play a much deeper involvement in the strategic aspects of service delivery, so that through this public education, people can actually engage in tariff determination processes that determine cost on a daily basis. They can actually engage in the water services development plan in a meaningful way. Some of the achievements that have happened from the Citizen's Voice in Cape Town have really been a strong sense of people being empowered, counselors feeling a better understanding of how water services work and therefore better able to represent their constituencies. A really strong sense from the water sort of provider perspective in Cape Town of how regulation needs to work in township communities, and that it's not about a call center, it's not about a cell phone, it's about interface with communities that have difficulties who sometimes need to express it through various different mechanisms. And it has forced the city of Cape Town to change its approach to regulation that's context specific, which I think is really important for everyone else to pay attention to. And the success of this pilot in 2006 has led to the actual creation of an ongoing program that the city itself is funding, and that it's actually on its own penny. The DWOF is no longer involved whatsoever. The city has taken it on itself, and it now has 13 people running this on an ongoing basis, and it has created user platforms which brings representatives who have been trained from the community to challenge issues of service delivery problems, and that officials have to take those issues to the highest levels of decision-making in council and promise a rapid response. And these user platforms are meant not to displace ward committees, but to strengthen them so that the public is more articulate and coherent when they come to ward committee structures in terms of what's working and what's not working in that community.
There, because all of this that you said is in my constituency, and it's the Masi Bambani Fund that is involved in this, not the municipality on its own. I think if you just double check, because in the booklet that I received, it specifies the funding to myself. So I think just double check that again, because it's not the municipality, and it's really the Masi Bambani Fund.
I think you are correct. I think originally DWOF funded the pilot autonomously through the regulation unit, and the municipality itself has applied for Masrombani funding to help support this program.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, I guess you could say, but it's not like it came from outside. It's the municipality itself running the program. I don't think that should delegitimate the initiative. I think it's a collaborative effort. Just to move on, I think part of this speaks to the difficulty of enforcement challenges of the national regulator. And the question is, how do we, even though there are user platforms that are up and running, even though there's a CSO regulation reference group, the real issue is how do we allow these mechanisms to have recourse, to have teeth, so that when the public raises an issue, if there isn't responsiveness from the municipality, what then? And I don't have the answers. I think it's something that we collectively really need to work on, because I think the national regulator itself cannot address enforcement at the local level on its own. There has to be a partnership at the local level, and it's not happening with municipalities to the degree that we would like to. The question is how can CSOs play a support role in this endeavor? I think some of the other challenges facing the national regulator have to do with basic access to water services largely being the purview of the department, the DPLG, and the information flows from DPLG sometimes being insufficient to enable the regulator to respond to non-compliance when it comes to basic things like access to free basic water. So I think there's a number of different areas that need to be strengthened. And as the way forward, I would put forward a few recommendations to try to make sure this becomes an ongoing dialogue and not just a once-off. And first off is how do we develop a regulatory model that is less top-down and is more interactive on the ground? Secondly, how do we allow for a greater partnership with the National CSO Regulation Reference Group and the Water Portfolio Committee, Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, to try to further discuss the issues of recourse and to figure out how to strengthen it. Secondly, given some of what we were able to witness this morning, how do we allow water boards to show greater public accountability? And one suggestion is perhaps allowing a civil society representative nominated through the NWAC to sit on the board of directors of water boards. And finally, the sidelining of village water committees, I think, needs to be reversed. And what can we collectively do to strengthen and promote this in order to be able to address service delivery challenges in rural areas? Thank you.
Honourable members, you know, we can take somebody else also, but I think we should stop here and ask some questions. Because it's also almost lunch time. Can I see how we do? It's 5 minutes before lunch time.
I won't be allowed questions to turn over after lunch, because it's evident, you know, I don't find it fruitful to ask a question now and receive the answer after lunch, and we only have actually 2 minutes before lunch.
Can I find that of the presenters that we had here now? Who's going to be here after lunch?
All of them.
All
of them.
All of them.
Alright, so this month we should be able to do something after lunch. We managed to manage the time. So we can check something. My suggestion then would be, honorable members, the lunch is outside already. So maybe we should break here, have lunch, then we could be back in half an hour to try to
get there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Well, the hour.